John Gutfront, the self-proclaimed King of Wall Street, strolled across the trading floor of Salomon Brothers with a challenge that would define an era. One hand, $1 million, no tears, he said to John Meriwether, the firm's most legendary bond trader. He wanted to play liar's poker, a bluffing game involving dollar bill serial numbers, for stakes that would make most people's eyes water. This wasn't just a game. It was a power play between titans, a test of dominance in a world where testosterone and risk-taking mattered more than spreadsheets or strategy. Meriwether, brilliant as always, saw the trap immediately. Lose, and he's out a million. Win, and he's humiliated his boss. His response? No, John, if we're going to play for those kinds of numbers, I'd rather play for real money. $10 million. No tears. Gutfriend smiled his forced smile and declined. This moment in 1986 perfectly captured Salomon's culture, a place where the line between gambling and investing had blurred beyond recognition, where becoming a big swinging dick was the ultimate goal, and where making obscene amounts of money was the only measure of worth. Michael Lewis stumbled into Wall Street through a bizarre London fundraiser. Seated between wives of Salomon Brothers managing directors, he mentioned considering investment banking. One wife aggressively recruited him, mocking his vision of limp-wristed, overly groomed fellows, and promising her husband would arrange an interview. The evening peaked when she shouted at the departing queen mother, "Hey, queen, nice dogs you have there." While others went pale, the queen remained unflappable. This crude collision made Salomon irresistible to Lewis, socially unacceptable, but somehow his people. Unlike Princeton classmates who strategically majored in economics, Lewis had chosen art history. His Lehman Brothers interview exposed Wall Street's fundamental hypocrisy. When he honestly said he wanted to make money, the interviewer coldly corrected him. He should mention the challenges and high-caliber people, never money. Here was an industry singularly focused on making money that demanded its participants pretend otherwise. The Salomon Brothers training program was a brutal boot camp with 61 entry odds, yet fiercer competition awaited inside. Management posted jobs on a blackboard, desirable positions like trading mortgages in New York versus dreaded ones like selling municipal bonds in Atlanta. The classroom became tribal. Front row sycophants asked flattering questions, while back row rebels maintained dignity through indifference. Japanese trainees formed their own category, sitting front row but sleeping openly, protected by their strategic importance to Salomon's Asian expansion. Everyone aspired to become a big swinging dick, someone generating millions through telephones. Even women wanted this crude designation. After classroom training came the humiliating invisible man ritual, standing silently beside traders until acknowledged. The trading floor stretched a third of a football field, traders sitting elbow to elbow. Walking onto the 41st floor gave Lewis the creepy crawlies, though he realized he was progressing when watching a panicked corporate finance man flee. What a wimp. Louis Ranieri embodied Salomon's meritocracy, rising from the mailroom to create America's mortgage bond market. His desk featured a male spear scheming orange strippers' panties. He held lighters under traders' crotches, poured Bailey's Irish cream into suit pockets, and cut off new employees' ties. When pressured to dress better, he bought an $800 Brooks Brothers overcoat but wore it with $19 bright orange stack boots. Ranieri revolutionized finance by transforming illiquid mortgages into tradable securities, bundling thousands of loans, getting them rated, and selling them to investors who'd never consider individual home loans. While Paul Volcker's anti-inflation policies sent interest rates skyrocketing and the thrift industry collapsed, Ranieri expanded aggressively. He hired, fired mortgage salesmen, built his research department, doubled his trading staff, and employed Washington lobbyists to change legislation. By the mid-1980s, his traders made more money than anyone on Wall Street, creating compensation tensions that would eventually lead to his firing. Lewis's transformation from geek to respected bond salesman reveals Wall Street's power to reshape people. In London, trader Alexander became his mentor, displaying uncanny market instincts. After Chernobyl, while others focused on nuclear stocks, Alexander bought oil futures, then called back, "buy potatoes," anticipating fallout threatening European crops. Lewis borrowed Alexander's insights and another salesman's technique, hunching under his desk, plugging one ear, speaking rapidly, to create a successful persona despite lacking formal training. His full transformation came through a single sale, $86 million in Olympia and York bonds that had embarrassed Salomon for 5 months. Lewis knew how to sell them, but kept it secret for a month. His pitch to a French client was simple. A panicked Arab was dumping undervalued bonds. After barely a minute, the Frenchman bought everything. The legendary human piranha called, "That is fucking awesome. You are one big swinging dick." His words brought tears to Lewis's eyes, the ultimate recognition in Salomon's crude meritocracy. While Salomon dominated traditional bonds, Michael Milken at Drexel Burnham created an entirely new market in high-yield junk bonds. Studying fallen angels at Wharton in 1970, he noticed these troubled bonds were underpriced because investors avoided them to appear prudent. Milken recognized that lending to blue-chip companies offered tiny upside with huge downside, while small enterprises couldn't get financing at all. The junk bond market exploded from virtually zero to $12 billion by 1987, representing 25% of corporate bonds. By 1985, Milken began financing corporate raiders, creating the 1980s takeover boom. Salomon missed this bonanza entirely, dismissing junk bonds as evil, while Drexel replaced them as Wall Street's most profitable bank. The irony peaked in September 1987 when Ronald Perelman, backed by Drexel's junk bonds, attempted a hostile takeover of Salomon itself. To fend him off, Gutfriend called Warren Buffett for rescue, arranging a $700 million loan, a deal that preserved Gutfriend's job but cost shareholders dearly. Lewis left Salomon Brothers in early 1988, walking away from his clearest shot at becoming a millionaire. His experience fundamentally changed his relationship with money. Sitting at the center of an absurd money game, benefiting far beyond my value to society, while surrounded by equally undeserving people raking in fortunes, destroyed my belief in the meaning of making money. The innovations pioneered by Ranieri and Milken, mortgage-backed securities and high-yield bonds, transformed global finance. These same mortgage securities later played a central role in the 2008 financial crisis, demonstrating both the power and danger of financial innovation. The culture Lewis described, where greed was celebrated, risk-taking rewarded, and long-term consequences ignored, set the template for Wall Street behavior that persists today. The game of liar's poker serves as the perfect metaphor for Wall Street itself. A high-stakes bluffing contest where winners aren't necessarily the smartest or most deserving, but those most willing to take risks with other people's money. In a world that still worships wealth, we might ask, when did making money become more important than creating value?